I left one group out of the International Design Conference, which is very important, and that's our California group. They are also represented at the Design Conference. And I may have mentioned just briefly before, Dave, that we established a group in California, a design group in California. It was a very small but effective group, and it is not owned by the Ford Motor Company. It's a private venture, but we have contracted with this group, designers called Concept Center California, and they're totally dedicated to just Ford projects, and they have the total capability of handling a design from the initial sketch stage right through final completed fiberglass model.
Really?
And they've been very, very effective, and they've contributed to a number of our programs here, and we have a very unique arrangement, working arrangement, that we have set up with this group. And I've mentioned them now because they are part of this Total Design Conference that I'll be attending in September. And we, like I said, we've met for the last 3 years, and we've had conferences in Europe and here, and we always try to alter the format of the design conference to keep it fresh and stimulating. And this is what it is. It's a gathering of these design minds from around the world to give us their views on the way they picture design and the way it's trending in the different areas of the world. And from this, we can generally put together, I think, trends and directions that will affect us no matter where we are. Because as I mentioned before, the world is very definitely getting smaller with communications, the way we have it working so effectively for us these days. And it's been very, very helpful for us to exchange ideas in these conferences and develop these new ways. And it's not only new designs, but we talk about new ways of doing business, better ways to interface with our companies in different countries, and better ways to interface with each other. And we're getting into, because of these conferences now, I think we're getting into more cross-pollination of designers. I personally think of design in terms of, in international terms, I should say, not just local terms. We do have, obviously, local requirements, local design requirements that we must respond to meet the needs of the marketplace, the individual marketplace. But I think there are some overall guiding principles that have come out of these design conferences that will affect all of our designs. For example, I think it's important for people, no matter where they are in the world, to recognize an automobile as a Ford product. Again, it gets back to the world becoming smaller, people are traveling more, and communications are just giving out information on a worldwide basis now. So people will see a Ford, an Australian Ford in Europe or in the US, or an American Ford product in Europe or Australia, or a European product here, one of our products here. We're selling European products here now, as you know, with the Mercur, and we will be bringing in another version of that next year. And we want people to know that although it is different, we want them to see this common design thread working through all of our product lines worldwide. We're very proud of what we're doing. We believe we are developing designs around the world that are meaningful, that do make a statement, that have strong personalities, and by meeting as we are in these conferences, I think we'll be ensuring that we can keep the kind of design continuity that we're starting to develop now. I don't see this in any other corporation, really none of our competitors. They'll design cars in different areas of the world. Well, not too many people do that, by the way. The Japanese do mainly all their design work in Japan, and most European companies do all their work in Europe. But we are designing in different areas of the world for different markets and building in different areas of the world. I just wish other corporations would do that. I wish the Japanese would do that, by the way, instead of just hauling out of there. And I think that's where we're different, and I think we have a certain uniqueness, and I think that will pay off for us in the long run, because we do have the ability to respond to local marketing requirements in different areas of the world with this. But we can still maintain a Ford design motif throughout all of these products, no matter where we are in the world, by keeping this close contact. We're also getting more of a cross-pollination of designers now. I think, as I said, I think in terms of international design, and I don't think of a designer as being just an American or just an Australian or just a German or a Brit or an Italian or a South American. I think of them as a designer, and what we're trying to do and what we will be doing more of in the future is this cross-pollination we will be bringing. And we're doing it right now. You know, I have Americans in Europe, we have Americans in Japan. I would like to have Japanese designers here, Australian designers here, Italian designers here, Australian designers in Europe, Italian designers in Japan, yeah. And get more of this kind of mix of talent and develop it and think of these people on a much more international basis and feel comfortable about it. Feel comfortable about having an Australian designer working here and knowing that he will be able to produce and understand the American market. I mean, he will just do it. It's a fresh approach. We get a new viewpoint on design by using this kind of cross-pollination, and it's working. And we're doing it right now. I have an Australian designer here working on a particular project right now that on a car that will be sold here and Australia and the Asia-Pacific area. And it's just a delight. And I happen to personally be very, very comfortable with this concept, having worked in Australia, having worked and lived there, and lived and worked in Europe. And I know some people aren't, but I really believe the world is trending this way. We just damn well have to start thinking this way. That's all there is to it. It is no longer an us and them. It's, hey, we're all in it together. We are the Ford Motor Company. And let's take advantage of it, because this is one of our real strengths, the international aspect of our whole company. You know, years ago, I can remember Henry Ford talking about the international outlook of the company, and he wanted all of his top people to have international experience. And I think it's really paying off in this company, and I've got to tell you, I believe we wouldn't have the Taurus and Sable cars that are coming out now. We wouldn't have the 83 Thunderbird and the Cougar and the Temple and the Topaz in the form that you see them in today if it wasn't for our management here in the Ford Motor Company having this international outlook and having the international background and experience which allowed them to have this outlook. It's a real international exposure that these people have that I want my designers to have. And then you will see that we will be able to reach out. We won't be afraid to reach out. Our management won't be afraid to reach out and have the distinctiveness to our designs, which I think is so key in the type of marketplace that we're getting into now. And let's face it, the buyers that we're appealing to, even here in the U.S., are just getting so much more international exposure, whether they travel or just see it on TV. You have to be dead if you're not affected internationally these days. You know, we can't be as insular as we used to be in this country. That's all there is to it. The world has exploded. We have to go beyond our shores now. So I think that's going to have a very strong effect on overall design, and I think we have the wherewithal and the talent. We have it here, and we have it on a worldwide basis in all our design centers in the world, and I want to take advantage of that, and I want to utilize that, and I want the input of our designers from around the world in all our designs. It's stimulating. It stimulates my people here in the design center in Dearborn when I have designers come in from our international studios and just give them a different viewpoint, a different way of looking at things. I mean, it's just, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to walk into a creative environment and see these people from around the world perform and just try it a different way, try a different outlook. It's infectious. It affects all of our designers here, and I think it's a very exciting way to do business. I mean, that's what we're in. We're in the excitement business. My end of the business has to be.
No stodginess here.
It better not be, or we're dead, Abe. I mean, we know how to do stodginess. That's easy. A lot of people do that
for
around.
A few years.
Yeah. A lot of other people are still doing it around this town, and we want to break with that tradition, and we want to be on the leading edge of design. And I think, personally, that this is one of the best ways of doing it. I want to capitalize on one of our biggest assets, the biggest asset that we have in this corporation, and that's people. And I mean people on an international basis. Why not draw upon them? Why not use these minds? It's there. It's just the talent is there.
Certainly, you're right about Henry Ford II, who branched out internationally right after World War II and kept after it. But it seems to me that General Motors did not follow suit. I think they they were somewhat surprised by this. Even though they had their affiliates, it wasn't until very recently they began to really move ahead in Europe, and you'd had quite a lead on them by then, I think.
Yeah, and we've maintained that lead, and we certainly intend to keep it. And I think we will, because of our approach and the outlook that we have with our international operations. And we're not, I think the important issue here is that we in the Ford Motor Company are not trying to tell our international operations how to do their business. We're not telling them how their cars should look. You know, we're not saying, hey, if a Taurus sells here, your car should look like a Taurus over there. You know, that isn't the approach. I think we've established a basic design premise for all of our cars, but we have to allow our international operations to have the autonomy to respond to the local market requirements, and yet with this common thread working through all the design, so people still recognize them as Ford products. I think that's key, and that's important. I don't see our competitors doing that, and that's fine. Let them go the way they want to go, but it certainly seems to be working for us now. And I think you'll see a lot more of that in the future, in all of our future designs, and I think that the design conferences, the annual design conferences that we do hold, are really contributing to this, Dave, and keeping our designers in tune and abreast of what's going on around the world. It's just been very, very stimulating.
Where are you getting your designers from these days, your apprentice, your... we know of all the veterans you've had over the years. Where are the young ones coming from?
We have, over the years, we've been getting most of our designers from the Art Center College in Los Angeles, which several years ago moved to Pasadena, California.
Right.
And that's pretty much been the mecca of automotive designers. I just read in the paper yesterday that Toyota donated $1 million to the Art Center. And that's, boy, I mean, the Japanese are not missing a trick. And they really, and by the way, they're getting their designers from there also. They caught on to it.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned before in these interviews that now, as far as I know, just about every Japanese automobile manufacturer has set up a design studio in California. And I'd like to get back to our California studio in a minute. But we also get designers from the Center for Creative Studies here in Detroit, which is the Industrial Design Automotive Department is being chaired by Homer Lagasse, who is an ex-Ford designer, also had time at General Motors. And he's probably one of the most enthusiastic designers that I've ever met in my life. And he has just turned that school around, and I hate to say it because I'm an alumnus of the Art Center, but they're giving the Art Center a run for their money. So, and he is getting students from around the world now, and he is placing his students on an international basis. As a matter of fact, I just had lunch with Homer the other day, and he was telling me they had about 8 students on summertime programs with European automobile manufacturers. He's doing a superb job. He really is. So those are the two key schools on a worldwide basis, and all of the European and Asian automobile manufacturers are coming to the Art Center and to the Center for Creative Studies for design talent also. So those are the main areas we're getting.
Is Pratt Institute in Brooklyn and like institutes, are they still turning out automobile designers?
I understand they have an industrial design department, and I have never been there on a recruiting trip, but we do check them out periodically, and also the Cleveland Institute. Brigham Young University has a very good industrial design course, and we have recruited a few people from there, and they're very good talent. But the main schools are still the Art Center, the Center for Creative Studies, very definitely.
It reminds me, before we get into the California Concepts description, something we haven't covered, and of course it's a big part of your operation, the design of trucks and tractors and allied implements.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do this with your left hand or
we don't like to think so because certainly not our left hand. It's a right hand operation, Dave, and it's all part of our operation here. Although it does have some autonomy in that we're dealing our designers in truck. John Aiken is our director of truck design now. That's large, small truck, and that's interior and exterior truck design.
That's a good move.
Well, we think it is in this one, especially. And it's working very well, and as you know, we're number one in truck sales and light trucks right now in the U.S.
The Japanese are coming up fast.
They are. They certainly are. But I think we're very, very well prepared for them. Thank God there's a 25% tariff on all those Japanese trucks coming in.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. There has been for the last several years. I just hope the government doesn't lift that. And I won't get into why I think we should have tariffs or local contact restrictions or anything like that. That'd take me another 17 hours to give you my thoughts on that. But, however, maybe I should make a few comments on that just for historical purposes to see where that does eventually wind up, say, 10 years from now, because I'm very, very concerned and very worried about that whole aspect of us, of this country going through our deindustrialization process, as I refer to it. I think it's a very serious issue, but I'm not here to talk about that today. But our truck studio, it gets a lot of visibility in this corporation. We think that we're on the leading edge truck-wise, not only car-wise, but truck-wise, too. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this or not, but you know the best-selling, overall-selling vehicle in the world is our F-150 truck. Yeah. We sell more trucks for one vehicle than any car in the world.
It's a real workhorse.
Yeah, real workhorse.
And it's gorgeous, too.
Yeah, it's a terrific vehicle. And people really like it. But people don't think in terms of trucks as being number one in sales, but they really are in many ways. And I think our John Aiken, who's heading up that studio now with Graham Bell, is doing a superb job. And of course, they're working directly with Ed Williams, who is our vice president in charge of truck operations. So what I'm trying to do is have set up the studio so they have a direct interface right with the operation that they're working with. And in the case of truck, it's working extremely well. Some people felt that maybe one of the reasons we do such a good job overall on truck, and I don't mean just truck design, but I mean engineering and overall development of trucks, is because it they seem to have more freedom and more latitude, and they are they seem to be able to hold with an original design concept and work the theme through without the changes that we go through on the car side. And I think that's simply because of competition out there. There's obviously we're getting a lot of competition from the Japanese now, but there was less competition, very definitely less competition in the truck arena than there has been in the car arena, and the changes weren't happening as quickly as they were in cars, so you could really start a project and stick with it and develop it right on through without going through a lot of changes to respond to different needs of the marketplace. I think that had a lot to do with it. So,
is it easier to change a truck design than an automobile design?
No, it isn't, Dave, and I think we have to speak in terms of timing. And it takes just as much time to redo or change a truck as it does a car. Yeah, really. There are no shortcuts that can be taken on a truck versus a car, really. We're getting better at it, but if we come up with a new idea, a new development idea, or a timing shortcut on a truck, I can use it on a car, so, and vice versa.
Just one quick word about the tractors. How do you view tractor design these days as it obtains it for it in the industry?
Well, of course, we're probably one of the unique vehicle manufacturers in that we are developing tractors also. And tractor designs obviously don't change as often as car designs do, but it can still be a very exciting.
Certainly a lot different than it was 25 years ago.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Especially now with the cabs that we're building for all the tractors, and they consider a tractor the farmer's office now. My gosh, these.
Equipped with everything.
Everything from air conditioning, stereo, and all the conveniences of home. Which is fair enough. I mean, if you were out there in a hot field in the middle of Iowa someplace, you certainly want those kinds of conveniences. But that's all handled by our staff design group, our industrial design group.
Yeah.
And again, they work directly with the tractor people, so it's a pretty clear-cut design exercise and design process that these people go through and doing their tractor development. And it's been successful for us, but the tractor market now is becoming very crowded with a lot of people. And again, the Japanese are moving into that end of the business too.
Yeah.
And they saw a real crack there, and they're going after it. So it's going to be a tough business. I think we've got some of the finest products out there in the tractor end of the business, but boy, that competition is coming at us from left, right, and center. Never, you can't sit back and pat yourself on the back for having done a good job on a tractor, a truck, or a car these days. No, you absolutely cannot be complacent. You must continue to move ahead with it. You're dead if you don't. You're dead if you sit back and say, hey, we've really done a good job. Don't pat yourself on the back too long. Keep moving.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be appropriate at this point to explore both your ideas about the type of design think tank that you established in California, which I suspect was largely your idea and your creation, and then juxtapose that or ally it with your own personal design philosophies as you see them in the past and coming up in the future.
How do we go? Did we get into some of the California studio before?
I'm not sure.
How we set it up?
Okay,
then maybe I can
just briefly
go on again. Okay. We wanted a presence in California. We wanted some California input. People say, well, why? Well, we really believe that California is the melting pot of automotive design. I mean, where else in the world can you see the diversity in the marketplace, in the automotive marketplace, that you can see in California? I mean, you don't see it in Europe. You don't see it in Germany. You don't see it in the UK. I mean, there's a certain sameness to European cars or Asian cars or anything else, but I'll tell you, California has it all. I mean, everything is there, from European cars, Asian cars, American cars, dune buggies, hot rods, the custom jobs, the low riders in downtown L.A., the surfies, beach buggies, pseudo-classic designs, antiques,
replica cars,
it's all there, and it's very normal to drive down a freeway in California and be surrounded by everything I just mentioned and probably 17 other variations.
A real laboratory.
It really is, and people there are used to anything. They're willing to try new ideas, and their whole lifestyle is conducive to that. California really is on the leading edge in just lifestyles in general. Their whole culture is a leading edge culture, in my opinion. I mean, you know, they're always experimenting with everything.
And very hip.
Very hip, very with it, very on trend.
Yeah.
And so we say, well, let's, which is probably the main reason that the Japanese are there, because they want to tune into that and understand, try to understand. It must drive the Japanese nuts to try to understand. I'm sure they can't understand the United States, and then when you go to California, they must look upon that as another country. I think we in the United States look upon California as another country, so I can imagine how foreign nations look upon us. But we've found that it's been very beneficial to have this group working with us in California. And what I've set it up in a way so that the California studio will interface with our individual studios back here in Dearborn. For example, if we are working on an escort program, then the manager in the escort studio works with the California studio as an extension of his own studio. And if he is covering on an escort proposal A, B, and C, or for example, A might be a traditional approach, B might be a very reaching, say, a European approach, C might be a California approach that does, you know, that answers their needs out there, whatever they might be for the particular car line in that particular segment. And so we wind up in a show then with three distinct proposals, you know, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. You're not just getting all the cars, all the proposals out of one studio, and it's really a fresh point of view that you will get from the California studio. And there's a bit of a fine line there, because although the studio uses the California operation as an extension, the studio cannot direct them or over-direct them, I should say. The studio designer and engineer will ensure that the California car is on package and meets all the hard point requirements and dimensions, etc. So that it's not just some way out blue sky proposal that has no meaning or basis. So when the California proposals come in, they meet all of the requirements that the cars in the studio meet. And these are not just orphans dropped off on the doorstep. They're very serious proposals. And we have used a number of California ideas on our up-and-coming models. There's no question about it. They have really contributed to the overall design effort. Yeah. These are very meaningful efforts. I believe it was in operation just a year this past March. So they've been in operation for about 18 months now.
Uh-huh.
And it's been very successful. Dick Cutting, who is running the operation, is an X4 designer.
I spell his last name.
Hutting, Hutting. And he is an instructor at the Art Center College in Los Angeles. So he keeps in tune with young talent out there, and this gives us an opportunity to keep fresh talent moving into a studio. And by the way, we have designer exchange programs that we're working out with California and Dearborn, to have, so we can have his designers here and our designers working out there on projects. Again, just part of this exposure that I think is so absolutely essential for the designer to keep him abreast of the latest in design trends. Absolutely. Yeah, you've got to. I think Mr. Peterson referred to it once recently as repotting our designers, and I thought that was a good way to do it. You know, pull them out and get the roots stuck into some new soil, fresh soil, to get some different nutrients in them, I suppose. But I've been very, very pleased with the output. And just last week, I was in Cologne, Germany, and had some discussions with Uwe Bonson, our Vice President of Design in Germany. And he's very interested now in utilizing our California studio. And I was very pleased that he looked upon it with the kind of interest that he had. He was there a couple of months ago visiting Dick on his way to Australia and had an opportunity to be shown around the operation and was very, very impressed with the quality of design that Dick was turning out. Impressed to the point that he would now like the California operation to contribute to some European designs, contribute design proposals for the European operation, which really pleased me because I felt that, I was very satisfied with it, and it just reinforces my opinions on the California Design Center now to have Uwe want some of their import for Europe too. And it just shows that California really is on trend. They really understand the automobile business and really understand where it's moving, which is what we all really want to know. Everybody wants a glimpse of the future. Everyone wants to know where it's going, and I think that's one of the reasons it's such an exciting business, or I found it to be very exciting all these years. You know, some people will still ask me, how you can do this? How you mean? They'll say, you mean you've been designing cars for the last 27 years? That's all you do? And I say, yeah, that's all I do. But boy, it's really been an exciting time because I've done it here in Australia and Europe, and it's just continually changing, and there's no end to it. Just when you think you get, I guess it's important never to think you have the perfect design. Once you do, you're dead.
Well, I think you've been credited, I think rightly so, with bringing the Euro Aero, at least reviving the Aero look and bringing the Euro look, mating that with the aerodynamic look. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think a number of people have said that, Dave. I guess I don't refer to it as a Euro look. I just refer to it as an international look now.
Fine.
And but in all fairness, that's where it is coming from. But and now, however, I think we've jumped ahead of the Euro look, and we're influencing the Euro look a bit. That may be kind of a heady statement to make, but to say Dearborn's going to influence Europe, but
you're no longer cribbing from European design.
Yeah, they're looking at us now.
That's good.
And that's the position we want to stay in. And the cars are selling, and that's about all we can ask for, really. That's their whole mission here.
Your advanced studio is turning out some interesting concepts for you to work with. How does that work locally? Are you happy with that setup? It must be marvelous to have them.
It is, yeah. In the past few years, our advanced group has turned out a number of cars that have contributed significantly to the designs that we're putting on the road. And it's, I think, one of the most important aspects of that studio and the products that they're developing is it conditions management to new thinking. For example, if they bring out if they develop a car and have it in, they can have it in auto shows, but even prior to auto shows, have it around and expose our management, our internal management, to a new design. It conditions management and paves the way for management to be more comfortable with designs, get used to it, understand it, and not be shocked by it when we work with some of those design elements on our new products. So we not only have to condition management, we have to condition ourselves. I personally have to live with a new design before I'm comfortable with it. And by the way, I believe if I'm not a little uncomfortable with a design,
that's interesting.
There's not much new there.
Yeah.
But if I'm uncomfortable, if a design sits around for 2 years and I'm still uncomfortable with it, chances are it's not going to make it.
You would prefer a little discomfort at the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really believe that the customer out there in the marketplace should be a little uncomfortable with the design the moment it hits the showroom floor. Now, for example, we have lived here in the design center with the Taurus and Sable for the last three and a half years. Mm-hmm. And we were a little uncomfortable with it at first, but we had to discipline ourselves to accept that, try it, give it a fair try, make sure management understood it, live with it for a few years. Now these designs will be all new to the customer. Of course, this is old to us now before it comes out because we've lived with it for so long. But we predict the customer will be a little uncomfortable.
Well, are there any final thoughts, Mr. Telnak, that you might have on design in general, automotive design, industrial design in general? Any philosophical reservations you might have about what's happened? Or more precisely, the excitement that you found that's creeping into late 20th century automotive design?
Well, I think it's, at this point in time, it's interesting to note that a number of designs or design directions that people, different corporations around the world have moved in seem to have been right, but they've all seem to be kind of reaction type designs. A new design will happen in Europe and Japan will catch on to it and try to run with it and develop it. And the Japanese are very innovative, by the way. I don't believe they are inventive. I believe the Japanese are innovative. Americans are inventive. Europeans are inventive. And I believe our cultures, both European and American cultures, although they differ, we have a lot of similarities. And we foster invention. We reward invention. We reward risk-taking. The Japanese don't seem to do that because of their culture and their group thinking and their group mentality. I mean, obviously, it works very well in many aspects of life for the Japanese culture. They obviously need this kind of culture to survive as a nation. They must work together. And their government obviously supports it, works very well with the people. Probably they work with their people and they support their industry much more than I feel is fair. And I think it gets into fair trade and a lot of other issues, which I won't get into. But I think that we have the kind of inventiveness, and I think that's really key in America. And I may be placing much more importance and emphasis on this design freedom and latitude that we seem to have in the U.S. than is real. But I believe it's essential, and I believe that it's key to the success of our nation and the products that we're building in our nation. This is one area in our culture that I may be overemphasizing, but it's one area that I believe will help our nation, because the Japanese can completely outdo us on wages. They just have lower wages there, so they can beat the hell out of on wages. And I think there's a very basic issue there, and that is we either come down to their wage level throughout our entire nation, not just the automobile industry, and lower our standard of living to their standard of living, or they raise theirs to ours to balance this out. And having watched the Japanese since MacArthur signed the treaty with them in 1945 after the war, I don't believe they're going to raise their standard. I mean, I think they'll keep it low, and they will keep the value of the yen low just so they can have that leg up on us and really wipe out any industry that they decide to wipe out. I mean, those are cold hard facts, that's all. I mean, you can see it happening, and I think that if we don't recognize that, we're not in touch with the real world. But the one area that they haven't really zeroed in on, and I'm not trying to be punny about this with the Japanese, is this latitude that designers have in this country and in Europe, and we can really use that, and I think that's one of the strongest forces that we have working for us. And so we can outmaneuver them design-wise, but I think our government will have to give us a lot of support in, on an international basis to make our country competitive with the Japanese. And there are many ways that the government can do that, and I think they're just starting to wake up to that. It'd be interesting to watch and see how history or how it unfolds in the next few years, because we're going to need it as an industry. Otherwise, I think that our industry will be in serious trouble, and the designs won't make any difference. What designers have to contribute just won't make any difference. They'll be able to undersell us.
Would you say that their concept is creative, eclecticism, or and ours is innovative, creative innovation?
Well, I believe that I separate innovation and inventiveness, because I believe innovation just takes a theme and works it and develops it. And this is what the Japanese have been very good at for centuries.
Yeah.
We look at Japanese porcelain or China, and they took all of that from the Japanese picked that up in China and just developed it, and then developed the processes to manufacture it and turn it out en masse. And they're doing the same thing with any other product or any other new technology that they get a hold of, whether it's in the field of electronics or chips or whatever. You know, they don't necessarily invent. We, the Americans, invent it. We do all the R&D here in this country, and then it's just cheap to buy the R&D and put cheap labor on it and build whatever product you want to build. You can zero in on any industry you want and wipe it out. And I think that's what they do, and we don't operate that way in this country. And that's where I think we're going to have to make some changes. But I think that that's the big plus that we have going for us, and I want to capitalize on that. And it's just simply people that I'm talking about now. What I'm talking about right now, and I think that we have to, and I'll just speak at my end of the business. I have to really utilize the talent that we have available to us, and I think that's our strongest asset in our corporation. I think throughout America, it's our strongest asset. But we have to manage people. I have to, in our design operation, create the kind of environment that allows these people, our designers, to express themselves. And if I can do that, if I can set up that kind of an environment, I think that we can continue in the direction that we're moving and stay that jump ahead of everyone else. And it's not easy to do, but I think it's absolutely essential to create that kind of stimulating environment. That's what I really have to do, and give them the kind of guidance and be in touch with management and keep management totally familiar with the inventive process and the creative process that we have going here, so that management can then move ahead with these ideas and get them into the marketplace for us.
This has been a problem years past, that the management is not as creative or forward-looking as the design staff.
I think it has been a problem, but I honestly can't blame management. I blame the design groups in the company for not taking the time to familiarize management with and do the right kinds of presentations that will allow management to really understand what we're trying to do. So I can't lay any blame on management. I'm not trying to wave the flag and all this sort of thing, but I really believe that if we fail to convince management, then I blame ourselves as designers and as a design group, because we certainly have the opportunities now with the culture that we have in our corporation and this bottom up sort of process that we've developed in our corporation. Now we have the opportunity to let ideas bubble up to the surface, and again, it's my role to ensure that management is familiar with the latest in design trends. And if we fail to do that, I can't blame them. I have to say, hey, we just haven't done the right kind of a presentation to convince them that this is the way to go.
They're certainly more enlightened than they have been.
Oh yeah, and again, it's because of their. I think it's because of the exposure that management has had to the international marketplace now, which they're getting more and more of. We really are.
Yeah.
I mean, North America is not just the U.S. It's now Canada and Mexico.
Right.
We're just spreading out as we go along and develop. I think it's a very bright outlook. I'm always very optimistic, but I think it's one of the most exciting times ever to be in the design business. And I love the international approach to it. I really do. I love the challenge of it. And I just know we have the management team and the right kind of talent, both in design and engineering, to develop the right kinds of products. It's here. I've seen it happen. I see it happening. I see the right kind of people here that want to make it happen.
One last question, and it's probably not a facetious one, but you've led the industry pretty much into lower, rounder, flusher, and wider. Do you see an end to that? How do you see it in the next 20 years? What type of practical design do you see? Would you see an evolutionary trend coming back, or what can you see?
No, that's a good question, Dave. In the past, the designers used to base designs on one theory, and that's if in doubt, go lower. We finally achieved a very, very low cowl on a product that we're in the process of developing just recently. And I think it was the first time, and I mentioned this at one of our design subcommittee meetings to our management team, and I said, we finally got the cowl so low and had an opportunity to go lower. And it was the first time in my life as a designer I ever blew the whistle and said, hold it, I think we've gone low enough with that cowl. And by the way, I refer to the cowl because I believe the whole car is set up by the cowl. Yeah. Once you establish the cowl height, you establish seat height, which establishes roof height and overall height of the car and the slope of the hood and the general architecture of the automobile.
But are you moving the engine amidships there?
Oh, we're trying those things also, yeah. We're doing a lot of that sort of thing. But not for four-door sedans and regular family sedans, more for the sporty cars. But I never thought I'd reach that point, but I finally said, hey, the question is, how low can you go? Well, we found out. And our engineers made a lot of breakthroughs recently on that. And as I said, the alarm went off. We said, hey, I think we've gone about as low as we need to go. And still package people comfortably in the car, of course, because ergonomics are a big concern. And I think our people are doing an outstanding job on ergonomics. So we have all the tools. We have all the design tools to work with now. I can't say engineering is not giving us a low enough engine or a low enough suspension or a low enough cowls. All the building blocks are there, Dave. It's up to us to use all of these pieces now and all of this latest technology and develop the cars. And I think that's why it's so exciting, because it is very definitely the first time in my life I can't get out there and really start pushing the engineering community to give us more, dial a breakthrough every hour on the hour.
Yeah,
we really have the components to work with to do the kinds of cars that meet the requirements that we're setting out to meet these days, and that makes it a pretty exciting time. And I know I'm saying this now, and probably 2 weeks or a month from now I'll have some other new requirement that will jump out at us that someone else someplace in the world will come up with that we hadn't thought of, and that'll stimulate a whole new round of ideas and a whole new approach it, or somebody will come up with a new breakthrough and a new material that will give us more design freedom and flexibility. And that's about the only thing I can guarantee. That will happen, and I don't know when or where or what the material will be or what the breakthrough will be. But that's what makes it such an exciting business right now.
Yeah. One quick question on electronics. Do you see the electronics concept taking over from the driver eventually?
I hope not. I still hope. I don't think it will. I think the driver wants to be in control.
Yeah.
I think it's useful to have electronics to assist the driver. They're making some very significant breakthroughs in electronics now. I think one of the most exciting breakthroughs recently has been our anti-skid brake system. My gosh! I mean, I had it on a Mark that I was driving all last winter, and that was just one of the most dramatic breakthroughs, dynamic breakthroughs I've ever seen in an automobile. It's easy to make a car go fast. We know how to do that. We're learning how to make a car as fuel efficient. But for that to me was one of the most dramatic breakthroughs ever, to make a car not only stop, but stop in a straight line on ice. And it really works. And that was an electronic breakthrough. And now there's another one that will be coming on stream in the very near future, and that's an electronic anti-slip device that will not allow your rear wheels or front wheels to spin on ice when you're accelerating.
Yeah.
So you will not spin your wheels on ice anymore. I mean, this, you know, this is known technology. This is happening. It's there. We're doing it. It will be on cars in the fairly near term. And that's, you know, so that helps the driver. That doesn't take the driving responsibility. It doesn't take the responsibility away from the driver. And we don't want to take it away from the driver. I think, you know, if I can just bounce back to California for a minute, California, the California culture, I think, encourages people to be in control of their lives, right? I mean, you know, if you don't like your wife this week, go get another one or try that one, or go, if you don't like your job, take off and live in the mountains for the next 10 years. Do whatever you want to do, but you are in control. Well, I don't know how far people really want to take that concept, but I firmly believe when it comes to driving an automobile, the driver should be in control. And if we can use electronics or any other technology to assist the driver and allow him to be in control, it's worth it. It's worth the effort to get that into a car, to make it safer for the driver, for his passengers, and for all the other vehicles on the road.
Well, thank you, Mr. Dominic.
Okay.